There are several times of the agricultural year that we look forward to, and this is one of them. It is a glimmer of a sign of hope that we're eventually going to get out of this winter, and it is almost Massachusetts Maple Month, and this weekend is the kickoff to Mass Maple season. So we're at a sugar shack at Boyden Brothers in Conway with Claire Morneau from CESA, the local hero, folks, community involved in sustaining agriculture, and a Boyden himself, Howard Boyden. Thank you for welcoming us here to your maple sugaring operation.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm very glad to have you here. And yeah, we are on the edge of winter, but I don't think the precipice is in sight quite yet. The long-range forecast is showing pretty cold out into next week.
Including the groundhog.
Yes. You know, he's right 46% of the time, so.
I'm right 46% of the time.
Just like a broken clock, it's right twice a day. So anyway, yeah, we have actually gotten started. We headed out about 3 weeks ago, started pulling our lines up and whatnot and doing repairs and started tapping, and we've made 50 gallons of syrup so far.
Oh, wow. What is that an average for close to the end of February?
We're right around where we should be.
To me, I thought it must be, it's been so cold, it's been so snowy, that maybe the sap isn't even running yet.
Oh, no. The angle of the sun's very strong. Mm-hmm. And those trees, they're little solar heaters. And once the sun gets on them, if you've got a tap in them, the sap's going to come out. You know, if you walk down the sidewalk where there's actually still some living maple trees, the road salt hasn't killed yet, you'll notice that it drips on the sidewalk anytime starting in February because of the pressure in the tree. Uh-huh. And so if we happen to be there and have a little tap in the tree, we can catch that sap.
So the trees want to explode with sap, like a pimple. It's our maple sugarers' job to pop them.
Well, the truth is they actually do create a pressure inside up to 40 pounds per square inch. And the cambium layer on that tree can only hold so much, so they will actually erupt little cracks and start dripping out. So we tell people that we're actually, we're taking a little blood before it comes out on its own.
Yeah, but you're easing the pain. It's like lancing the boil before you boil the sap.
The truth is we do it in a very sustainable way. You know, my family has been tapping a lot of the same trees for over 100 years, probably 120 years.
Wow.
Same trees.
So what is the date of the founding of Boyden Brothers Maple?
Well, I am not 100% sure. It was either the late 1800s or early 1900s. My great-grandfather used to make sugar, and he would boil it all the way down into hard sugar cakes because you use that before the sugarcane trade got very big in the United States. So it was something that was used for trade and sale. And he had a flat pan on a brick arch in the old sugar house at the farm. And my grandfather in the 1920s bought the first maple syrup evaporator. The switch had been away from the block cake sugar, and he went to making maple syrup. And then in 1966, my mother and father built this place here on Route 116 in hopes of getting some business from the local traffic. And that's really been our story. And we make 1,000 gallons a year and we sell it all.
Can you talk about just modern maple sugar techniques? You know, it's not buckets and taps anymore.
Okay, the reason you don't see the buckets and taps so much is that we all used galvanized buckets for years, and galvanized buckets are completely safe for maple sap until you decide to leave your sap in the bucket for 2 or 3 warm days and it ferments. When sap ferments, it becomes acidic, and that releases lead in the galvanized. And it really does take quite a lot of fermentation for that to happen. But even states like Vermont have completely outlawed galvanized buckets. And so if you're going to do buckets, you pretty much have to go to sap bags, you know, plastic bags or plastic buckets or spun aluminum or stainless steel. The other reason we don't do so many buckets is, like I said before, the road salt has killed all of the roadside trees. And that's where the buckets were handy, these long, flat stretches of road where you could put 3 buckets on a giant 200-year-old tree and come along with a 5-gallon pail and collect that sap. We've been forced to go back to the woods now because that's where the maple trees are growing. And it's hillsides, so down the hill it comes in plastic tubes to tanks at the bottom. I have 32 separate stops to pick up 3,500 taps worth of sap.
And how many trees is that?
About 3,500. Each tree gets pretty much 1 tap.
Oh, okay.
Now,
people do 2, right?
Well, out in the woods, the trees tend to be smaller because they're all reaching for sunlight and their stems are smaller. So I have what I call the tree hugger's rule. And basically, if you reach around that tree and give it a hug, if you can't touch your fingertips and it's got a healthy crown, then it can get a second tap. But up until then, from the time it's as big around as a sap bucket at chest height until you can't touch your fingertips, which is a 6-foot circumference on me, depending on how heavy my jacket is. You know, then you're at just one tap. So the majority of the trees on tubing are one tap per tree.
How has the tapping this year compared to other years? Because, like, the last 2 years, we've kind of gotten traditional New England winter. But before that, it was getting warm and people were tapping, like, into, like, early January, mid-January.
Yeah, we heard MLK Day a couple of years ago.
Oh, sure. Now, I used to have a 40-hour-a-week job, and I would tell the people that I work for, I'll be out of here February 14th. And it got to the point where I was missing several runs by Valentine's Day. Geez, I've already missed 10, 20% of my season. Now I'm retired. I get in the woods when I want to. And I'd say this year when it warms up, we're going to have every tap in and ready to rock and roll.
We're with Howard Boyden at Boyden Brothers Maple on Route 116 in Conway, right across from the grammar school, right down the street from Pekarsky Sausage, underwriter of NEPM, but where we get a lot of sausages personally whenever.
Because it's delicious.
We do love it.
One day they'll bring their smoked turkeys back.
And then we're going to get some maple syrup here too, I'm sure, because it's the season. Tis the season. And we were mentioning about the weather and how that has changed over the years. But has it been more normal the last couple of years? Can you attribute it to anything? Is it weather versus climate?
So climate is something that we've been watching since I was little. My grandfather would never tap before the 15th of March. Then my father said, 1st of March, you know, we'd be in school vacation. Come on, Dad, let's tap. Nope, too early. By the time I took over, school vacation was the time to tap. It was perfect, last full week of February. Now it's backed up a whole month in my lifetime. So that's climate. Weather, on the other hand, look at the Northeast. I mean, we have been socked in cold.
Yeah.
When Denver has had 74 degrees already 2 weeks ago.
Wow, for that one football game.
Yeah. And, you know, you used to be able to look at the weather map and say, well, here it comes. Well, here it came, and here it missed us. So here we stay in our deep freeze. And that's all polar vortex and that kind of stuff. And luckily, where the maple trees grow, we tend to get that extreme, the weather extremes. And that's what makes the sap run. Without, you know, flat weather, sap won't run. Tree will not create pressure. They have to have weather extremes. It's got to go below freezing and warm above freezing for the sap to run. It's just the mechanics of the maple tree.
Obviously, snow is part of the deal if you're going to be a maple sugar farmer. But how does it impact your season when you get a lot of late season snow like we've had?
Well, it makes it a real pain. Well, no, I have, like along the Whately Road going from Conway to Whately, I have 7 barrels where the lines come down across the tree. Well, guess what? They're all out on the back of that truck because we took them all in before the storm. So the snow plows didn't plow them into the bank. That's a problem, but snow also helps us later on in the season when we're looking for those freezing nights. You get a nice, cool, clear night that maybe in Northampton or Amherst, it's going to be 35 degrees. That snow is going to bring the temperature down for us. We're going to get a freeze and the sap will run the next day. So actually, we like to see a snow cover. The other thing snow cover does, it blankets the ground so that the frost can come out under the snow so the trees can get a drink when they need to, because for sap to come out, water needs to go in. When the ground is frozen hard on an open winter, sometimes it takes a real long time for the trees to open up and run because they just plain can't get a drink.
The little shack that we're in right now is half store, but half evaporation situation. So take us through your equipment over here.
It's actually 20% store, and the rest is evaporation. So right where I'm standing, 12 feet from the wall, is where the store ends and production starts.
Yeah.
This is the warm area. So after the syrup is made, it's warm. It gets brought in here. It gets filtered. It gets put into the water jacket canner, which holds it at 180 degrees, and then it gets filled into bottles.
Bottles made in Turner's Falls, I think?
As of right now, but we'll see what goes on.
Oh, dear. I haven't heard that story yet.
Yeah, so we have those. We also do glass. This is a jug filler right here. You put a bottle under and you turn it on, push the button, and when the syrup gets up to the top, It shuts off.
Cool. Like filling up your gas tank?
Yeah, yeah, that's one that I built in 1985. Then it was after I took over the sugar house. And, you fill in a gallon jug, it's real easy to turn away. And I saw too much syrup going on the floor, and I said, I know that there's electronics out there that will do this. And I had a friend who was very clever. It worked at UMass. And he said, oh, yeah. And he went to Radio Shack, and he got a level sensor for windshield washer fluid that you used to be able to put in your car way back in the 1980s before they came standard that way. And he adapted that technology to this valve. And this has been filling jugs for us since 1985.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. I also noticed that you have sample tasting.
We do. Whenever there's steam coming out the roof, there's always samples available. Jean saved aside.
Jean is your wife.
A little sample. Jean is my wife and my absolute partner in this process. There is no way that Boyden Brothers Maple would exist as it does today were it not for Jean Boyden. I'm not kidding you. One day when we were dating, it was a terrible day. It was rainy out and cold, and we were going out to collect sap. That's when we did buckets. We went out there to collect some sap, and I drove by my grandmother's house, and I knew she was in making maple candy, and I stopped, and I said, come on. Took her in the house, introduced her to my grandmother for the first time. I said, Graham's making candy. Have her show you how. And the rest is history.
Now is it true she's in the Massachusetts Maple Hall of Fame because of that?
Actually, the International Maple Hall
of
Fame.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even know there was one.
Yes, there is. It is in Croghan, New York, which is a funny place. But, well, no, funny place for it to be because it's out of the way, but it's almost in the exact center of the maple-producing region. Okay? If you think all the way down to West Virginia and all the way up into northern Quebec and Ontario and out to Nova Scotia and as far west as Wisconsin, Northern New York is actually the place to have it.
Yeah.
And both Jean and I are going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame on May 23rd.
Wow!
We were both nominated at the same time, but separately.
Uh-huh. So what categories?
Enough, there's no categories to it. That's the thing about the Hall of Fame. It is not the outside looking in. It's the inside looking around. You're elected to that by your peers.
Uh-huh.
I'm the past president of the North American Maple Syrup Council, and I've been involved in local maple promotion ever since 1985. I'm just a little toad in the woods, okay, compared to maple, some of these people that tap 100,000 taps and whatnot. But I guess somebody figures I was a little bit effective. I don't know if you've ever seen the phrase, make maple a staple, but I coined that phrase as part of a contest to come up with a catch line for maple that North American Maple Syrup Council has, and several states have adopted that as their state slogan. You know, it's funny, every now and then a little toad in the woods, if he doesn't get stepped on, can actually amount to something.
I go to this festival in Tennessee every year, and what I bring is maple. It's the most appreciated gift when I go to Tennessee because they can't get it.
Now, this that you're tasting now is golden syrup. This used to be what everybody wanted, first-run syrup. They used to call it fancy. Over the years, people have acquired a taste for the darker varieties on their table syrup because they're a little bit stronger. You notice how light and almost vanilla-y this taste is? Mm-hmm. This is what Jean and I save for making candy and cream. Mm-hmm. Because when you make candy and cream, you're condensing those flavors. And it makes the best candy and cream. And Jean has been 5 times first place international candy competition.
Right out of Little Conway.
5 times. Yep. So like I say, she's not standing here in the room right now, but I'll tell you what, this place would not be what it is. There would still be Boyden Brothers Maple, but it would be a whole lot less than what it is right now. Mm-hmm. When we decided to take it retail, my father always made syrup mostly for the wholesale market. He took his barrels to Vermont, of all places, and sold them. Well, that's how they get a reputation for good syrup, is by using some of ours.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I have some friends over the border that'll be putting a target on my back for that one. But he used to take it there, and in 85, when we took over, we decided, there's more money to be made in maple syrup than just getting that one small check at the end of the season. My grandfather always said, sugaring gets the men and horses in shape for summer. He never said it pays the taxes. He never even said it buys the groceries. Selling for the bulk market, if you're not big and have a super efficient operation, it's really hard to do. But The retail market is a full-time job. Gene's making candy almost every week throughout the year.
Wow.
Gene has had so much to do with the development of this business. And she's such a humble person, you wouldn't get her to say four words to this microphone.
That is not why she's not here.
No.
We would have
tried to
get her to say more than four words.
It's like, no, she ran from us. It's fine.
She is regretful, but she did make those awesome cookies
over there. Good.
Yeah.
And this tastes almost like bourbon.
And the earlier stuff, the first run stuff, correct me if I'm wrong, often is a little more sugary, while the later stuff, the darker stuff, is more maple-y.
Well, okay. It all has the same amount of sugar.
Okay.
It all will measure up to 67.5 Brix, or right around 67 Brix, B-R-I-X, the measurement of sugar, but it's different kinds of sugar. Your early season syrup is mostly sucrose, which is a complex sugar. It's still two molecules attached together. As the season goes on and it warms up, natural occurring bacteria that are in the environment begin to feed on that sap as soon as it comes out of the tree. Coming out of the tree, it's always the same. That feeding does two things. It basically takes away some of our sugar, so you're ending up getting less syrup out of the amount of sap that you bring in. But it also breaks down the complex sugars into simple sugars, breaks it down into dextrose and fructose, and they caramelize differently in the boiling process to give you that stronger flavor. So if you caramelize, say you caramelize onions with pure cane sugar, they'll caramelize a little bit. But if you take some brown sugar, and brown sugar, same way, there's more simple sugars in that, you'll get that stronger flavor. Well, the same thing's going on here with maple syrup.
I have to say, I feel like I had absorbed the what used to be known as grade B, but now it's all grade A, but like the propaganda in support of dark syrup only. And that lighter syrup is also really, really delicious.
It's incredible. It really is. It's still what I reach for. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, if there's a lot of kids around the table, I'm putting the medium amber on the table because they'll just drink this like it's water. But it is totally a personal taste. I have people that come in and they want the very darkest syrup we have, and they put it in their iced coffee and on their yogurt, and they absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have something for everybody here. And that's a good thing, because otherwise it would go in a barrel and go to Vermont and help them get a good reputation for their syrup.
I wanted to ask about what you see in the future for the maple industry, the local maple industry, with climate change, international competition or cooperation, depending on what happens. Just what do you think is coming in the coming years for maple?
I think the biggest problem with maple is not necessarily going to be climate change, but I think it's going to be things related to it. Mostly the things that worry me the most are invasives, invasive pests, invasive species, and of course the use of road salt. We overuse road salt horrifically now. It just makes me so sad that people can't afford to buy snow tires and take their foot off the gas a little bit and think they have to see a black road, 8 o'clock every morning. But I don't see that changing, because people like what they like, and that's that. I think the business is going to stay strong as long as we don't get hit by Asian longhorn beetle or something like that. We are in the maple area. Slowly, slowly, it is moving north, but West Virginia still has a thriving maple industry in the mountains. And that makes me feel like, well, we're pretty good here. Things are going to have to warm up an awful lot. It's going to be more volatile. I think we're going to have more very poor years and more very good years because of the volatility. That's what I've seen with the weather anyway. 100-year storms now happen every 5 years. The actual weather is going to affect us more and more. And so we have to take steps to mitigate that. And we are. And there is an awful lot going on in mitigation, like the use of vacuum. Last year, our season, we actually had 3 freeze-thaw cycles, solid freeze-thaw cycles. That's all. Usually we get 12 or thereabouts. And without the use of vacuum, I have the only vacuum that we have is what we call natural vacuum. We use a smaller diameter tubing so that the meniscus doesn't break in it, and it actually pulls the sap from the trees. Without that, the sap would have stopped running the first day after a freeze, but we would get 3 days of run. So people who have one large sugar bush or two or three even that they can all put together with electricity nearby, they can run vacuum on these trees and get the extended runs. And that's something that I'm doing now on our larger sugar bushes only with solar-powered vacuum pumps because we have no electricity near them. So we have three little solar-powered vacuum pumps. I tried one, a Beta 1 built by the Bosworth company last year, 12-volt, and used a 400-watt solar panel, and it worked incredibly well.
Uh-huh.
So thanks to Harold Grinspoon, I now have two more, and I will probably have more in the future.
We always hear about the taps going up. What's it like at the end of the season when all of that has to come down?
Yeah. Okay, so the very first thing that we have to do is collect in all of our tanks and barrels, get them off the side of the road. This parking lot will be literally half full of tanks and barrels. The evaporator gets flushed out, cleaned out. We clean all of that stuff. And on the weekends, when I have a crew around, we put backpacks on and we head to the woods. And we start at the top and we work our way down that tubing, washing the tubing out. It take the tap out of the tree, wash it out, cut the spout off, plug off the tubing, all 3,500 of them. And then some of our tubing, about 1,000 taps, actually go through people's backyards. So we have to wind that up and bring it home and store it. And you better be good at putting tags on it, because what fits Jim's backyard isn't going to fit Tom's backyard next year. So we use really good duct tape and indelible markers to mark the tubing. And, of course, we all have abbreviations. And if, say, Charlie marks the tubing, Howard's reading it, say, I don't know where this goes. And if Howard marks it, Charlie's reading it, he says, I don't know where this goes. So it's always fun putting it back out in the spring. I did want to show you the nuts and bolts. We talked about the woods. And we talked about processing and filtering. Oh, no. That there, I saved this. This is what comes out of the syrup. That's called sugar sand. Okay?
Whoa. Weird.
And that precipitates, that's the minerals that precipitate during the boiling process, much like a tea kettle will get minerals in it over years of use.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, we are taking yesterday's sap that came in was about 49 gallons of sap to boil down. So you're doing a lot of boiling to get rid of those minerals. And that comes out in the filter. If you did not filter it, it would settle in the jug, but that last half inch in the jug, it would be like toothpaste. It's gritty.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That gets taken out here. I bring the syrup in from the evaporator, and I'll show you the evaporator if you'd like to see it.
Yeah, yeah. But what can you do anything with that sugar sand? Is it usable for any other prep?
It's actually mixed with food-grade diatomaceous earth.
Okay. Oh, cool.
And we mix that in. It goes in here. It comes out there in the filter. And what DE does is it breaks the surface tension on the syrup so that it can pass through the filters. So the filters are nothing but a piece of paper. That's what the syrup is passing through, right there.
So it looks like
It's like a Chemex filter.
Yeah, or a parchment paper.
A parchment, yeah.
Thick parchment.
Thick, but porous. But if you just tried to, under pressure, push maple syrup through it, syrup is funny stuff. It's both sticky and slippery at the same time. And it does not like to break its surface tension to go through something like this. So the diatomaceous earth, if you were to look at it under the microscope, looks like a bunch of little multi-pointed stars. And what that does is it clumps together, touching each other, and allows a path for that syrup to pass through the filter. The nice clear syrup ends up in the canner. And the syrup gets pumped under pressure into this cavity right there.
So it's like a metal bracket.
Yeah.
That looks like it's on some sort of a vice system.
Yeah. And then it's forced up against this waffle plate here, goes through.
It's foreshadowing to where it will end up.
Yeah. Goes through the paper and then back out these little holes here and back out the other side and up into the canner. It's a very simple machine that most people look at and say, what is that and how does it possibly filter syrup?
It kind of looks like a cider press.
Right. Well, or something that might be at the gym if you were going to do like the Nautilus.
In my previous job, many, many years ago, back in the early 80s, late 70s, I used to build these out of cypress for filtering cider and wine. And in here is the evaporator.
Now, evaporator has its own separate room.
I said, this side is warm, and this is where warm stops.
Thanks for the warning.
Sap wants to stay cold. because I talked to you about that bacterial action in the sap. Well, we want to keep that syrup as nice and fresh as we can. So I want to see my sap going from 34 degrees to boiling as soon as possible. No fooling around in between. So this room is cold. This is a super insulated wood-fired arch. Wood is right there behind you, behind that roll-up door. What you see here is permeate that comes from reverse osmosis machine. It's the water we take out of the sap. Mm-hmm. It's what we call hungry water. It has no minerals whatsoever in it. It's 100% pure H2O. And you see this little bit of residue in the bottom of the pan that looks a little gritty. That's the minerals. That's the sugar sand right there.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
Now, one of those things that you learn along the way is you need to keep your pan really clean, because if you don't, the minerals build up on the bottom to the point where they'll actually insulate and burn the pan, and you'll get a flavor called burnt niter in your syrup. And it's just a non-desirable flavor. Depending on how much I concentrate the sap with the reverse osmosis, I will make as little as 10 gallons an hour or as much as 60. And when I start making 60, that's when Gene wants to lock the door, because it's very hard to keep up filtering the syrup. I talked about reverse osmosis. I've been using it since 1981.
It draws the water out of the sap, so it makes it easier to boil. It's a process.
It's actually a mechanical process. It forces the water through membranes that will only allow water molecules to come through. This is my feed tank, this 800-gallon tank here. This is what holds the concentrated sap and feeds it to the evaporator. Once again, cold. The RO machine, however,
reverse osmosis.
Here.
This room is like a closet with
a
bunch.
This room I keep just above freezing. This is insulated as well as a beer cooler. This is a three-membrane reverse osmosis machine, which will throw away water. It will pull the water out of the sap at 18 gallons a minute. And I control the rate of release from the membranes, and that's what will determine how high a concentrate I make.
You must have been an early adopter of that then.
1981, my father bought the first one, and there were three people in the state, all bought them in 1981, uh-huh. and he was one of them. 1981 was a phenomenal sugar year. We've never had one like it since. We always made right around a quart per tap. We were running buckets back then, 2,000 buckets. And we made a half a gallon per tap that year. We made our first 1,000-gallon year. And my father said, something has to change. The woodshed was empty halfway through. He converted the evaporator to oil. That's something that he decided was pretty good. And he stayed with oil. But once our kids were on the ground and Grandpa was gone, I got to thinking, geez, our kids are never going to know how to boil sap with a wood-fired evaporator. So we bought a wood-fired evaporator from a sugar house that had been caved in by a tree, but we dug the evaporator out and bought that and put it in the sugar house beside the oil-fired one and taught the kids how to boil with wood, and I absolutely fell in love with it all over again. The old oil-fired one is sold and gone and making syrup in Ashfield, and this is a new wood-fired one. 6 years ago, we bought this one, and hopefully it's the last evaporator I ever buy.
What about your kids? Do you anticipate that there's another generation of Boyden brothers coming up?
Well, they were all here last weekend in the woods helping set, and one of them's an engineer, the other one's a doctor, but I suspect that they will keep coming back, and this fella that's outside putting wood in is my brother's son, my nephew. Yeah, there's good family support here, and there has to be.
What's this check, this hash mark list behind us?
Oh, okay.
Khalees loves the lists that farmers have to create their organizational structure.
That's actually a very good question, because when I'm in here producing syrup, I can make about 30 gallons of syrup in this evaporator before the minerals are going to build up too much to where I'm going to start getting a burnt niter flavor in my syrup. So what I have to do is reverse the flow in this pan. You notice this pan is divided into little channels.
Yeah.
Right here is where I was taking it off yesterday. So it was coming in from the flue pan where it does its initial boiling, and then it goes into here, back and forth across, dead ends right here. Temperature probe would be in here. And when it got to 219.9 degrees yesterday, the valve opens, lets it out. Then it closes when it changes by a tenth of a degree. after 30 gallons or 6 pails full thereabouts, 6 to 10 pails full, depending on which pail I'm using and how strong I feel that day, I have to change sides, and which is a matter of swapping valves around here and moving some of the syrup that's almost syrup from one to the other with a pail. It'll actually happens under full fire, but it's real easy when you're making syrup to, was that number 6 or was that number 7? Which pail? So there's the hash marks right there.
Gotcha.
Okay. And that's how we keep track. And every pail that I carry in to Gene, I put down the hash mark. And that way I know when I have to change sides.
We could go to Pekarsky's and see how the sausage gets made right down the street. But no, we're here watching how the syrup gets made. Now we're back into the warm.
There's one more thing I should mention is if you can't get your maple syrup at Boyden Brothers, you can always get it at Pekarsky's.
Uh-huh.
Because we are not open, you know, on a regular basis. We're open when there's a live body here.
Yeah.
You know, if you see a live body, stop in. We'll sell you syrup, candy, cream, whatever. But look to Pekarsky's because they have our full product line, along with several other stores, too. Food City, Apex Orchards, Baker's Country Store, Natural Roots, the Mill Village Store, Country Store down in Amherst also has our syrup. So there are a lot of places to get it.
Howard Boyden, who is about to be inducted into the International Maple Hall of Fame with your wife, Jean, what does that mean to you, the two of you, carrying on this legacy that's well over 100 years old now, here in Conway, at Boyden Brothers Maple? What does it mean to be acknowledged by your peers in that way?
Well, it's an incredibly humbling experience. That's the only way I can describe it. I nearly fell over when they called my name at the conference last October. We were in Michigan at the Maple Conference, and they announced the inductees, and I almost fell over, but Gene said, oh, go get your award. You know, I stood up, I was walking to get my award, and they called Gene as the second person, and I looked back, and she literally was falling out of her chair. I went back and got her and brought her up. It means so much because, like I say, this is from the inside looking around. And these are the movers and the shakers. It really means a lot. It always meant a lot for us to take home some ribbons and whatnot and prizes from the international judging because we always said that this is where the big boys come out to play. Well, the big boys counted us among them, and we're very humbled by it. And it's an incredible honor.
What a pleasure to talk to somebody who's so knowledgeable about this subject. This has been really, really great.
Well, I am maple for sure.
It's
we're going to tap you.
It's murder.
It is in my veins for sure, and it's something like I say, if this place burned to the ground tomorrow, I'd be out behind the house, you know, with a little flat pan making my syrup because it just has to happen.
There's a crazy little shack beyond the track.